she was gonna keep. Oh yeah, alright, take it easy baby, make it last all night. She was an American girl.
This is Deborah Craddock, a podcast where we sit down with everyday Americans and hear their extraordinary stories. I'm your host, Deborah Drucker. Come along with me as we discuss those things that we were always told not to talk about: politics, religion, and more. I promise you'll be inspired and have your mind opened by the end of this episode.
Well, it was kind of cold that night. She stood alone on the balcony. Yeah, she could hear the cars roll by out on 441, like waves crashing on the beach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Deborah Craddock. Today on Deborah Craddock, we are going to hear the story of Bryce Blanton. Bryce epitomizes what it means to be a good citizen. In high school, he organized fundraising events and clothing drives. After college, he worked as a youth development professional with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. Bryce is currently a driver for UPS. In some ways, Bryce's whole story and life is a miracle, and he has lived it with humility, generosity, and a commitment to his community. Now he's a young married father, an amateur chef, a Lakers fan, and the proud owner of an English bulldog named Belle. Today, we are going to learn about the journey that has made Bryce the amazing man that he is. Welcome, Bryce.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here today.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're going to start at the start. I know you are living in Laguna Beach today, but where are you originally from?
I am originally born and raised, lived in Aliso Viejo, but did all my growing up here in Laguna Beach.
And Aliso Viejo, for those of you who don't know, is in Southern California. Did you have siblings growing up?
I did. I have two younger brothers, Noah and Aiden.
And did you grow up with your mom and your dad?
I did.
And do you still have your mom and dad together?
I do. And I see them and talk to them very often.
How fortunate are you, right?
I'm so grateful.
So tell me a little bit about that home life.
It was a lot of fun. It wasn't the traditional home life where dad worked a 9-to-5 and mom was home. My dad was home majority of my childhood growing up, and my mom worked. I went through a lot of medical stuff when I was a kid, and my mom brought home the medical benefits, and that allowed my dad to be home to raise me and my brothers. He was taking me to and from doctor's appointments, treatment days, all that. And then eventually my dad developed his own graphic design business where he was able to work from home too.
Well, tell me about what it was that ailed you that you were going back and forth to doctor's appointments.
I was diagnosed with a brain tumor when I was 2 years old.
And how did they discover that, Bryce?
I was playing at the elementary school where my mom was working and is still working. And I was knocked over by a kid and I was knocked unconscious. I was taken to the emergency room just to make sure that I was okay because I was only 2 years old. 2 to 3. And the doctor came in and said, okay, so we're here about your son's brain tumor. And my mom said, no, he was just knocked unconscious. We want to make sure he's okay. And then that's when the doctor pulled the curtain shut and told my parents what they had found.
So thankfully you fell down, or they may have not discovered that brain tumor. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And tell me what happens from that point forward. They discover the brain tumor. And do they know then if it's benign or if it's a malignant tumor, if it's going to spread? Walk us through the steps of what happens.
So after that, they didn't know for sure what kind of cancer it was, what kind of tumor it was. I did end up having a biopsy of it. And where it was located, the doctors determined that it would do more harm than good to fully remove it. My parents decided to go with a chemotherapy treatment that was being researched. My life expectancy, I wasn't supposed to live past the age of 8. And the way my parents explained it to me was they didn't follow the research plan the way it was intended to, because if anything went wrong, my parents wanted to be able to move accordingly and not adhere to these firm guidelines.
Wow. So they were real advocates for you.
Very, very much so, yes.
I mean, they really went out there. And you were then treated at Children's Hospital of Orange County, CHOC?
Yes. CHOC was where was, I guess you could call it home base, but all my treatments were done at Mission Hospital in Mission Viejo.
And I understand, because for those of you out there, I know Bryce's mother. She was the teacher for both of my two kids in the very young years. I think it was second and third grade. And when this happened, the whole community was aware of it. And I recall many people in the community coming out and helping the family. And I understand that CHOC is an amazing organization, amazing hospital, where the patients and the parents have no debt, no bills. Everything is paid for. What a beautiful thing. And you were also considered a make-a-wish child, no?
Yes, I was.
Is that because they thought it was you were not going to live beyond the age of 8?
I believe so. I was so young, I didn't know a different life.
Right.
My life at that time was going to and from doctor's visits, going to the hospital every Wednesday. I also wasn't aware that I had a quote-unquote end date to
right.
where I wasn't supposed to live past the age of 8. I didn't know that.
Of course. Good for your parents. Why would they tell
you
that?
Oh, they were amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was a recipient of a wish. My dad, being a graphic artist, he was a graphic designer for GT Bikes in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I loved going and visiting my dad at work. And I wanted a Macintosh computer so I could design like my dad. My other wish options were a dog, a chance to meet Michael Jordan. But I really wanted that Mac.
Wow.
And I remember a limo came and picked us all up. We went and had the Cheesecake Factory for lunch. And then when we came home, there was a huge party outside waiting for me. And that's when I got my late 90s turquoise translucent blue Macintosh. And I was ecstatic.
Wow. So you took that over meeting Michael Jordan?
I did.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
I did.
And I know you're a basketball fan, and we're going to get to that.
Fan.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So you have this make-a-wish because they think you are not going to make it.
Yes.
So what happened that had this turnaround that you went from this terminal diagnosis to surviving it?
One thing I feel like, and that I've seen, having heard various medical stories, is medicine obviously helps. My chemotherapy that I receive helped. But also, to get better, there's an emotional component that comes with it. And similar to what you had said, my community at that time was huge. And even to this day, it's bigger than I realize. And I'm 29. So 21 years past when my end date was. And there's still people that I'm meeting now. It's like, oh, we prayed for you during your chemotherapy treatment. We made your parents' meals. And I had visitors every Wednesday at the hospital. One of our family friends would dress up in a character costume and visit me.
So to pick up your spirits, really?
Yeah. And my mom's friends were always there, bringing me puzzles, trading cards, drawing pictures. And even your own husband came and did a show for us.
I recall Lee Rocker went and did a concert on your floor
yeah.
at CHOC.
In the children's arts and crafts game room.
Do you remember it?
Very vaguely.
Yes, you were
I remember,
so young.
I remember seeing him in that playroom. My mom still has the autographed photo of me and him. So yeah, there was a lot of community involvement in my life at that time, rather if I was aware of it or not. We were attending a fairly large church, so everyone there knew about it, obviously. The former Laguna Beach High School boys varsity basketball coach even put on a fundraiser to help raise money to help my mom and dad.
Wonderful.
And that wasn't something that I found out until after high school.
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like, yes, the chemotherapy helped, all the medication that I received helped. But then the optimism, the involvement from family, from friends, from even people that I still haven't met yet.
Amazing.
Definitely helped bring me through it.
Well, I absolutely believe that our minds can control our bodies.
Yeah.
And optimism is a really powerful medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that all those people came out for you. And I'm so happy that you're sitting here with us today. What was the home life like? Was it like a very warm and close home, lots of fun and laughter, or was this all kind of tamped down during this time?
There was a hybrid, I would say. The chemotherapy, the day after, I was usually severely nauseous. At the preschool that I went to, they had Ziploc bags for me. Everybody's car had a Ziploc bag in it in case I got sick. It would also make me very tired. But at the same time, my mom and dad wanted me to be a boy. And at the time, it was just me and my brother Noah. And me and Noah would wrestle every once in a while. We couldn't wrestle too hard. I had what's called a porticath put in my chest. One of the chemotherapy medications I received was very, very strong. So it had to be pumped directly into my heart. So me and Noah couldn't wrestle too hard, but we had a lot of outdoors time. We were riding scooters. We had bikes. We would play soccer, football, catch, whatever it was. And my dad was super hands-on with us too. My dad played with us a lot. My mom played with us a lot.
Wow.
We did lots of arts, crafts, and things like that too. So in a way, yes, it was a very warm home life to where my brother and I could be boys.
Right. So they kept it as typical, as wonderful as they could.
Yes.
And I can't even imagine the emotional journey of your parents. So in your home, there's a lot of faith. There's religion.
Yes, very much so.
And do you carry that religion through today?
I do.
Good. And do you feel that that brought you some positivity, some hope, or you didn't even recognize it probably as a little boy, but what made you adhere to that?
So when you're that young and you're getting a needle poked in you every so often, eventually you reach a point where you're like, I don't want to do this anymore, mom and dad. Like, this isn't fun. And my parents, being Christians and people of faith that they are, they would say, honey, God is going to make you strong. God is going to make you strong so you can get this shot. And after them saying that one time, that became my mantra. Every shot, every IV, it was as that needle went in, and I remember it vividly. I would always just yell, God makes me strong. We did the chalk walk every year, and that was a giant fundraiser that Chalk Hospital put on. And on my Team Bryce shirts that my dad made, at the bottom, it says, God makes me strong. There was a point where my vision with my tumor was so bad. I believe my mom said it was 2400, and they weren't sure what my vision was going to be like when I got older.
So the placement of this tumor,
yes,
in your brain,
yes,
what was it sitting on?
It was sitting on my hypothalamus,
okay,
and my optic nerve.
Okay.
Yes.
Does that affect puberty?
It does. I started puberty at a very young age. I believe I started the early signs of puberty at about 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
And
how do they stave that off?
I was getting a shot once a month.
Okay.
To kind of slow down that growth and development process.
So two miracles. The
yeah.
fact that you're here
yeah.
and the fact you're a father now waiting for another child.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That
is a blessing.
Huge blessing.
Your life is a blessing.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I was playing baseball in the house with my Uncle Mike when my vision was bad. And I saw an angel. In my parents' house, and I pointed it out. And then my Uncle Mike threw me the ball, and I hit it. And my Uncle Mike looked at my mom and said, Mary, he's going to be fine.
Wow.
Even now, I have 20/20 vision. My vision's great. I wear readers just out of, caution.
Hey, we all do now.
Yeah, right? So I'm a firm believer that I'm here because of God and that He has a purpose for me on this earth. I'm still trying to figure out completely what it is, but that is definitely a big part of who I am.
Well, you definitely have lived a very pious life also. And when was the tumor diminished? When was it in remission?
So the tumor is there still.
Okay.
And what they were looking for was they wanted to see no more signs of tumor size change. So shrinkage or actually growth. I believe my mom said they wanted two consecutive MRIs where there wasn't any change. And that's when they were going to stop my chemotherapy treatment. And I believe it went longer than I was supposed to have my chemo. I think my treatment was supposed to be only about a year, but I ended up doing a year and a half to 2 years. Right. And that was when they decided, okay, we can stop treatment.
Okay. So that's when your vision came back.
Yes.
When it shrunk.
Yes.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. What age were you then?
What age was I when my treatment ended?
Yes.
I was about 5 and a half, 6. I was in kindergarten.
Okay. So now you're in kindergarten. You're at El Moro.
Yes.
Okay. So you're functioning with all the rest of the kids.
Yes.
Was there any catch up that you had to do or were you where you were supposed to be developmentally at that point?
Yeah, no. I was where I needed to be at that point.
Perfect.
Yes.
And now I'm going to go to what's going on in the house. Mm-hmm. So I know that you come from a religious home. Mm-hmm. And were politics discussed or did politics play any role in your home?
I don't remember politics being discussed much, especially in terms of like political party discussion.
Right.
That was something I really didn't hear much about until like high school. When I was better to comprehend it and understand it. Okay. But there were definitely, you know, different viewpoints that we were educated on.
Okay. So when you turned 18, did you vote?
I definitely did.
And do you still vote every election?
I do. I have a voicemail that I have saved on multiple hard drives, USBs, and on my phone from my grandpa on my 18th birthday. And it says, "Happy birthday, grandson. Now go register to vote." And I have it saved because if you knew my grandpa, that's such a thing that he would do.
Yeah.
And I have it saved because that voicemail, one, I love my grandfather's voice and he's a major influence on my life. But I just love that he was like, "You're 18, go register to vote."
Good job.
And he said, "I don't care who you vote for. I just want you to vote. You need to be actively participating."
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you to your grandfather. Is he still with you?
He is.
Awesome.
Me and him talk probably once a week. We call, we just check in on each other.
Your mom's dad?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
And do you have your grandfather from your father's side too?
No, my dad's dad passed away and my dad was in middle school.
And does your dad still have his mom?
Yes. Grandma Jewel is in Lake Forest still, just thriving.
Wonderful. Yes. What a beautiful family. All right. So politics, not really discussed in the home, but as you become aware of it in your teen years, you're involved. So how did you then arrive at your personal political perspective on things?
I definitely think faith plays a lot into it, as well as just personal education and educating yourself.
And where do you get your information?
Everywhere.
Yes. How do you discern what's, you know, accurate? There's so much false news and so many narratives that people want to drive out there.
So my grandfather, again, he watches conservative news, he watches liberal news, and then he watches international news and see where the overlap is. And that's where he finds what's actually happening.
That sounds smart.
Yeah. And so that's something that I've borrowed from him is you can educate yourself and read about what you believe, and that's going to support what you want to believe. But then you also have to look at the other side and see what the other side's saying. And then if you really want to know what's going on, you look at someone who doesn't have an interest in either one and see what they're saying. And then the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Excellent. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. That's a really intelligent perspective.
Thank you.
To me, anyway. Okay, so now I want to ask you about being biracial.
Mm-hmm.
being in such a quote unquote white community, mm-hmm. has being biracial in Laguna Beach or anywhere had any impact or effect on your life?
I think being biracial in Laguna Beach has been really interesting because I've been able to be myself to a certain extent and take my interests and likes while also the influence from the community around me and kind of build my own character, my own personality. I grew up listening to a lot of different music. My parents educated my brothers and I on music. My dad, every morning on our drive to school, would play something different. Rather, if it was like Latin music on Monday, reggae on Tuesday, The Cure on Wednesday, Garth Brooks on Thursday, it was always something different. So music to me has always been a large part of who I am. I also realized at a young age, I couldn't wear the same haircut that my friend in elementary school had because I had loose curly hair and he had straight blonde hair. So the bowl cut that I wanted, looking back at it, really glad my parents didn't let me do that. The bowl cut that he had at 8, I couldn't do at 8 because my hair was much different. I found hip hop and rap in middle school and not the LL Cool J, Run DMC, Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff that my dad introduced me to. I gravitated toward a lot of Southern rap. So Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi. And I loved the way that those guys dressed. I loved the baggy polos that matched the hat, that matched the shoes, and the denim shorts. I was able to take that and wear that here in Laguna Beach, where by the time I was in high school, there were maybe two other kids wearing that same look.
Right. So you stood out for yourself. You wanted to stand out, it sounds like.
I definitely did.
Yeah. I mean, we all want to be seen, but you already were a little bit different being that you were biracial and you still wanted to accentuate that.
Right.
That's so cool.
And then I think one of the other cool parts about growing up in this town is for preseason basketball workouts, we would go paddle boarding. And I don't know a lot of other basketball programs in the world where you paddleboard for part of your workouts. And so I was able to take, you know, the hip hop side of things. And that I think hip hop also fed and grew my love for the sport of basketball even more so. And I remember my last week of high school, I spent at Main Beach playing basketball and then body surfing. And I think that's kind of, when people say describe your style now, it's that. It's basketball and body surfing at the same place at one time to where you can have that overlap.
So I see while you were growing up, you were selected by the Laguna Beach American Legion Post to represent the city of Laguna Beach in an all-boys government camp in Sacramento.
Yes.
What grade was that?
That was the end of my junior year of high school.
Okay. And how did that come to be?
I was selected to be a part of a program called Boys State. And Boys State is a mock government program. We did it at Sacramento State College. And the American Legion sponsors X number of boys to participate in this. I don't know necessarily how I was nominated for it. I don't remember hearing, oh, these people nominated you. Your name was submitted by these people. I was just picked for it. I was not necessarily an academic superstar. I had a very solid grade point average in high school, but I was very community service driven.
Right.
And I was very involved in Laguna Beach.
And what drives that passion to serve the community?
The community supported my family and served us. And I think it's a way for me to give back to the community. My dad is a Laguna local as well. My dad has grown up in this town and he's never met a stranger. And I try to emulate that of my dad. And if you see someone, you stop. If you have 2 minutes, say hi. Chat. What's your name? Oh, hi. My name's Bryce.
Hi.
Great meeting you. Have a wonderful day. Yeah. And just keep on moving.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. And you are so friendly. Thank you. I wonder, you know, there's so many strange evolutions in life. I wonder if, and I guess we could never know, you would be a different person if you hadn't gone through what you had gone through as a child. But then again, I look towards your brothers, and they're both also community active, right? Mm-hmm. And so in 2011, you're selected to go up to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And then in 2012, you're nominated to be Junior Citizen of the Year for the city of Laguna Beach.
Yes. I don't know how I was nominated, but I was the city of Laguna Beach's Boy Junior Citizen of the Year. I was very active when I was in high school. I was a leader of the Christian club at lunch at Laguna Beach High School. I was in the Make-A-Wish club. My friend had one called the Lumberjack Club, where all the money raised actually went toward planting trees rather than chop them down.
How beautiful.
Yeah. There's a program called WASC, and it's Western Association of Schools and Colleges, and it's an accreditation process, and I was on the student panel for that. I was on the City of Laguna Beach's student panel for different groups, organization, anti-youth drinking and drug use programs. So I was heavily involved. I was junior class president. I was ASB vice president my senior year. I was captain of the varsity basketball team my senior year. So I think my focus in school, much to I'm sure my mom's chagrin to a certain extent, I mean, she's very proud of me, wasn't so much academic, but was more social involvement.
What stopped you then from, like, now as an adult being involved in community politics?
It's not that I've stopped completely. It's I'm waiting to be settled into a community of my own. We're still not at a place where we own a house,
okay,
own a condo. We're still moving. We still rent. And I think once we were to settle into a community, I would get more involved.
Okay. I'm speaking like more in the like local politics, yeah, of your community. Does that interest you?
It totally does.
Yeah, I could, yeah, see you there.
I am a UPS man in Laguna Beach still.
How long have you been driving for UPS?
This will be my fourth year.
Okay.
And not a lot of drivers like Laguna for the hills, the tight streets. I love it because I'm from here.
Yeah.
This is me working from home. But I still am very active here in town. I still know shop owners. I know residents. My elementary school DARE officer and I see each other and wave and chat still.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now, so you're living outside of Laguna Beach.
Yes.
You're now a married man.
Yes.
You've got one child, a boy.
Yes.
And you're expecting your next child. Mm-hmm. Do you still get in the water?
I get in the water on my lunch breaks at UPS.
That's great.
Yes.
And I saw that you're involved with helping brands and individuals develop their presence on social media. And there's one company that you're a member of, Western Hydrodynamic Research Team. That has something to do with the beach, right?
Yes, it does.
So tell us how you're still connected to that.
I do a lot of writing in my free time. I started a newsletter, and I just write about my hobbies, my interests, things that I like that I want to share with others. And there is a brand that I found called Western Hydrodynamic Research, and they're based out of Newport Beach. And one thing about the Blanton boys is we have large heads. And the gentleman who founded the brand, Pat Towersey, Pat put a bungee cord in the back of a regular baseball cap, and it allows it to kind of go even further than a traditional snapback might. And so that was my gravitational pull toward it.
That it had a hat that fit you properly.
Yes. Okay. And that also looked a lot different than anybody else's hat out there. So being a marketing guy, going to college for advertising, and having worked a lot in that field, I was really pulled in by it. And then I did a newsletter write-up on the brand. and how it was a really cool, if you know, you know, type of brand.
Right. Okay.
And Pat found the newsletter that I wrote on it, called me up and said, hey, I need help with some of our social media content, writing, newsletter work. Would you be interested in it? I said, absolutely. So I've been working for Pat for about 2 years now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so where do we find that brand? What retail outlets, or is it only online?
It is online, whr.institute. And we are slowly expanding into retail stores.
Wonderful. And so I want to ask you a little bit about politics, since we're called Debracratic, mm-hmm. a little bit more. So how do you feel about the political landscape, if you feel anything about the political landscape in America today?
I feel like it's very divided.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard divide line. Looking at how my grandfather views politics and how he gathers his information, I feel like you almost can't do that and publicly say that you do that in today's political landscape. I feel like you're either one or you're the other, and you only listen to one or you listen to the other. You can't listen to both sides. And I feel like oftentimes, if you were to have a discussion with someone with a differing opinion, a lot of people don't want to listen. They'll let you talk. And then there's like, okay, great, you talked, you're wrong. I don't want to have any further conversation with you about it. So I definitely feel like there's conversations that need to be had, but can't be had because of these hard divides.
Right. And the only way to break down this divide is to have those conversations.
Yes.
So then that leads me to another question. What do you most hope for the future of America?
That we start talking more.
Right.
I personally don't have any social media platforms anymore. And I've been able to see the world again, I feel like, to where I can go to a restaurant for the first time and eat my food and not have to worry about sharing a photo of it with somebody else. Yeah. To where I can enjoy the smoked duck that I'm eating from a restaurant for the first time, instead of like, oh, this looks cool, let me take a picture of it first. I can show my wife, who's sitting right there with me, be like, babe, do you want a bite?
Yeah.
I can talk to people more. I can have that eye contact with them. And I think we need that more in society, is to put things down and stop looking at someone else experiencing it and start experiencing it for yourself.
Yeah, I agree with you. I am definitely an addict of my telephone and my iPhone and my social media. And I find that when I'm away from it, I'm emotionally more centered.
Mm-hmm.
And I am more present, you know,
yeah.
And I'm more attentive to the people that really matter, the ones close to me and present in my life, physically present, than people out there in the internet world.
I asked my mom once, because she didn't have her phone on her when we were younger. And I said, Mom, why don't you have your phone in your pocket? Similar to how like I always had mine on me. And she said, anyone who needs me, and if it's pressing, they're here in this room right now.
Huh.
Meaning my younger brothers and myself and my dad. To where her main focuses were all there. She knew where we were, what we were doing. And I remember thinking, when I'm home, I don't have my phone on me necessarily, because as long as my wife's home, and anyone who needs me and it's pressing in that moment is right there.
Right. And so I'm not going to keep you much longer, but I do want to ask you, if there's one issue out there today, mm-hmm. besides the divisiveness of politics and everybody not speaking, one issue on the table, what would you say is your biggest concern?
One of my biggest concerns, and it's been a concern of mine even since middle school, is homelessness.
Okay.
I partnered up with the brand Volcom when I was in high school. They had a program called Give Jeans a Chance. I knew a gentleman working for him at the time. His name was Ethan Anderson. And so I emailed Ethan to see how I could get involved with the Give Jeans a Chance program. He passed me on to a gentleman named Derek Sabori, who was overseeing it at that time. and he ended up giving me donation bins, trucker caps, stickers, and prizes to pass out. I then took that program to Laguna Beach High School, Elmore Elementary School, Top of the World, Thurston Middle School, and two other churches here in Laguna. And basically what it was people would donate their gently used pants, jeans, jackets, coats, whatever it was, and then they would be donated to various homeless shelters. Laguna Beach has a really strong homeless program. Rather, if it's the Resource Center in Laguna Canyon, where they're allowed to go and have a roof over their head at night. And then they have their transition program with the Laguna Beach Friendship Shelter, where they can sober up and then find a job. And then from there, they move into more independent housing.
Right.
I feel that homelessness is a big topic. It can't just be fixed by giving them a house, because having talked to a lot of them too, again, I'll chat with anybody. Some of them don't want a house. Some of them don't want that roof over their head. They enjoy being outside, but again, the conversation's not being had with them.
Right.
As to what resources would you like? A lot of it, I believe, boils down to mental health.
Right.
The drug addiction plays into mental health. Sometimes the bad luck can trigger a mental health event that happens. That then might lead them to drug use, and then they can't get off the street.
So if you were able to go up to, you know, Washington, D.C. and stand in front of Congress or Senate or whoever, yeah, what would you say? What would you feel?
If I was to speak to someone in charge, I would say that homeless people need more mental health resources, because you can give them clothes, you can give them a blanket, you can give them tools, physical tools. But I think ultimately what some of these individuals need is someone to talk to, and they need to discuss what, on an emotional level, what they're going through. So if I was to go to DC, I would push for more resources for these individuals to talk about what they're going through.
Well, I think talking is a really therapeutic thing to be doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy that you came to talk to me today.
Thank you for letting me talk. I love talking.
I love it too. And I love listening. And I like your story. It's a, you know, I meet people who say they're faithful, they're religious, they believe in Christianity, and they don't walk the walk. And I'm so impressed and so glad to know you, because you're a person who puts the walk into the talk.
Thank you.
You have done so much. And the family as a whole has just been such a contribution to this city of Laguna Beach. So thank you, Bryce Blanton, for your time that you spent with us today and sharing your heartfelt story.
And thank you.
This episode of Deborah Craddock was hosted by me, Deborah Drucker. It was produced by Lee Rocker, with co-production and editing by Gideon Brower. Our amazing music was performed by Amy Nelson and Kathy Guthrie of Folk Uke. Be sure to rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Deborah Craddock, check out deborahcraddock.com and our Instagram at Deborah Craddock. That's D-E-B-O-R-A-H Craddock, like Democratic. Until next time. Political is personal, so let's talk about it.